Epilogue. Tarragon Domain. Winter. My heart sank when I saw the front gate of the castle. Well, castle might be too generous. It was a fortified tower and a small, hardened shell keep, but this far up in the mountains it was perfectly adequate. The castle wasn't the problem. The banner that hung from the top of the gatehouse was crude. An old, undyed wool blanket painted with a design I couldn't quite make out. There was a mage's star and a shield, and some kind of animal, but the whole thing was off-center, poorly done and indistinct at best. It had my apprentice's touch all over it. "It occurs to me, sire," Sire Kay said in an almost amused voice, "that perhaps we were not specific enough in our instructions in this matter. It didn't seem like a job that required a lot of detailed thought," I growled. There was someone on the battlement of the gatehouse. I used mage sight to call the image closer. Sephasteron, his helmet looking more like a stovepipe than armor. He had a big goofy grin splitting his face. I relaxed a touch. Sephas had a good head on his shoulders, and he's as loyal as they come, so if he wasn't upset, it couldn't be all bad. From his perspective. From mine, it was a simple enough commission. I muttered as the horses walked up the incline toward the gatehouse. Stop by and see if poachers were still mining the snowstone here on their way back to Savendor. But they were to deliver our guest as quickly and expediently as possible. Perhaps they merely misinterpreted the command, sire, Kay soothed. This is one hell of a misinterpretation, I said. Dara, for future reference, if you don't understand an order I give you, please ask for clarification to avoid these sorts of misinterpretations. My youngest apprentice looked amused, which was better than anxious, I suppose. Master, I don't think I would be stupid enough to screw up an order this badly, she smirked. To do that, I believe I would have to change my gender. I cannot argue that point, I conceded, and I appreciate your good sense more than you know. And after I speak to those three gentlemen, I predict I'll appreciate it all the more. Hail, spellmonger, called Festeron from the battlement, waving his gauntlet at us in the cold air. Welcome to Astazi Hall. I did a double take. Astazi Hall. This is Tarragon Hall. The name was familiar, and it didn't belong to this place. It belonged to... Oh, now I had a glimmer of why my instructions had been misinterpreted. We rode under that homemade banner and into the yard, the chill winter breeze picking up at twilight. Sephasteron came down the stairs from the battlement, his grin even wider. And who, may I ask, rules Astazi Hall, Sephasteron? Sire Kay asked as he got down from his horse. A churl had scurried out and held the heads of all four of our mounts for us. He wore no livery, but he seemed properly cowed by us. "Why, that would be the steward of the Order, Sire Menelin," the young knight mage said as he descended the ladder to greet us. "All will be made clear in time. If you gentlefolk would accompany me into the hall, explanations will sound better with fire and cup." I nodded warily, and then spotted Joppo the Root, lounging by the kitchen shed, eating an ear of corn. If Joppo wasn't upset, that was telling. The peasant was not one to linger near danger or disaster. That, more than Festeron's smiling face, made me relax a bit. Whatever my two young idiots had done, it presented no immediate danger. "Lead on, Sir Festeron," I nodded. Whatever it was he was concealing, he seemed rather pleased with himself. He took us on into Keep's small great hall, where a fire was roaring on the oversized hearth at the far end. Mage lights floated above the three tables in the room, but most were concentrated over the table nearest the fire, where my two apprentices were sitting. In comfort, though Tyndall's right arm was in a sling and Rondell sported a fresh bandage over his left eye, they were smoking and drinking at table like they were two gentlemen taking their ease at an inn. Both rose when we entered, and bowed from the shoulders in unison until we had arrived near them and the fire. "May I present Sire Minelin, the spellmonger of Savendor?" Sir Festeron announced. "Sire Kay of Carguenyon, the Dragonslayer, Lady Lenadara of Westwood, the Hawkmaid, and Lady Ithalia of the Alcaalon." He stumbled over that last bit, presumably because he was unfamiliar of her exact title. For that matter, So was I, but more likely because Ithalia's presence just has that effect on men. Dara snorted in a most unladylike way at the young knight's difficulty. Tyndall was the first to speak. He stood up from his bow a full 2 inches taller than I remembered him being. Some of that could be accounted for the new riding boots he wore, but not all, not even most. His shoulders were broader under his mantle than I remembered, too, and his face had lost all but a hint of that boyish sharpness in the last year, and grown some fuzz. "My lords, my ladies, we bid you welcome to our humble hall." "Ah, humble hall," Sayake asked in my stead. My sphere hovered overhead among the mage lights and bobbled at my growing frustration. "To my knowledge, gentlemen, Tarraguan Domain is ruled by Sir Pangene, tenant-in-chief to the Lord of Sashtalia. In fact, I was here in your company not 2 seasons ago and enjoyed a cup with the man myself."
"Your information is no longer current, I'm afraid, Sayake," grinned Rondell impishly. "There has been a change in ownership."
"And just how did this change occur?" I asked, my teeth clenched. "And to whom does the honor of sire of this domain now belong?"
"Ah, as to that,"
Rondell said, with enough grace to sound a little guilty,
"you may find the tale humorous, master. And as to the new lord, that would fall to the chief of the order."
"What order?"
"It would be improper to begin at the ending,"
Sir Rondell said.
"It might be better if we told you what happened from the beginning, and perhaps a glass is in order,"
he said, looking even more guilty.
"Yes, by all means, let us tell you the tale over a glass of wine,"
Tyndall encouraged, waving at the table where glasses and bottle were waiting. I took a seat, but could not tear my eyes from the 2 truants as my senior apprentice poured. "If I recall correctly, I asked you to return to Tarraguan on the way back from your mission to quietly check on the snowstone smuggling here," I reminded them. "Assuming you and your charge had safely eluded your pursuers, I had thought that an order so simply delivered could be as simply carried out."
"One would think, master," agreed Rondell.
"We were overtaken by events,"
Tyndall sighed.
"Things were more complicated than we had assumed, Mage Lord,"
Sir Festeran said apologetically. "So complicated," I said, doing my best not to lose my temper, "that you figured the best answer to the situation was to take it upon yourselves to conquer the domain and potentially start a war between Sevendor and Sashtalia," I asked, letting more and more anger sound in my voice. The 3 young knights looked at each other. For all I know, there was some mind-to-mind communication going on, but they turned to me, shaking their heads in unison.
"Yes, Mage Lord,"
Sir Festeran said with some hesitation.
"That is exactly what happened,"
agreed Tyndall, confidently. I picked up the wine cup and sipped, not tasting the vintage at all. "I did not ride for 2 days to take a few long tales by the fire," I said darkly. "As succinctly as you can, describe to me the actions that led to this situation." The 3 exchanged glances again. Then Rondell spoke, perhaps by previous determination.
"Mage Lord," he began formally, "as you know,
you instructed us to meet up with the Gobbabeen Order and receive from them their charge, to avoid detection and capture by any and all parties.
Some of whom, I might add, did indeed try to relieve us of our duty,"
interrupted Tyndall, holding up his sling as testimony to the strength of their defence.
"And bring said charge to the safety of Sevendor," continued Rondell.
"Sir," Rondell, I reminded myself. He spoke like a grown man now, not a mere apprentice. If he was hesitant in his speech, it was due to thoughtfulness, I realized, not insecurity. "Once we checked in with you at Tauri, where you ordered us to change our route," he continued, "once we were assured we were no longer being chased, you ordered us to reconnoitre Tarraguan. If you recall, Mage Lord," Rondell said carefully, "when I asked what we were to do if we discovered that the clandestine mining was continuing, you told me, your exact words, in fact, were, 'I'm sure you'll think of something.'"
"So?"
I asked warily.
"Had I said that?"
"So we thought of something," Rondell explained. "It's actually quite an elegant solution, once you know the story,"
he said engagingly. "I beg you before the thrones of all the gods to explain that to me as quickly as possible," I replied impatiently.
"In short, then," Rondel said quickly. Upon arriving here, with our charge safely in the carriage, we begged shelter for the night from Sir Pangine. The gentleman happened to be in conference with a business associate when we arrived, and so he declined to see us.
Custom does not require him to do so, reminded Sire Kay, looking at the lads thoughtfully.
Lady Ithalia and Dara were enjoying the show, and Tyndall was enjoying the attention of the ladies. With a start, I realized that it had been nearly a year since either of them had enjoyed the company of my youngest apprentice. She had grown more toward womanhood herself, and if she had yet to reach maturity, her infectious attitude gave her a charisma beyond her years. I'd have to watch that.
Alas, too true,
Tyndall nodded. Yet hospitality, while it must be dispensed by grace alone, should not be spared for the sake of mere trade, he declared.
Well spoken, Sire Kay agreed.
Seeing how reluctant Sir Pangine was to entertain us, and being curious as to what would alter the esteem in which he previously held us, we decided to investigate the matter, Rondal continued patiently. Using certain spells, Sir Tyndall and I ascertained that the knight was, indeed, discussing the mining of the snowstone deposit on his domain, and knowing our master might be curious about just who was involved in this enterprise, we decided to act in his best interest.
My best interest? I demanded. So what makes you think you know enough to act in my best interest?
When the mage lord said, I'm sure you'll think of something, he was clearly investing us with that authority, explained Rondal confidently. Else he would have given us better instruction. As you did not, mage lord, we took you at your word.
And that gave you license to conquer a domain? I asked,
a pained note in my voice. Since Sir Pangine had not invited us inside, clearly we were not covered by the laws of hospitality. As such, we were as any band of errants, potential foes to any weak-willed lord who does not look too closely to his security. If we were not Sir Pangine's friends, then, by the gods, we elected to be his foes.
And just how did that translate into conquest? Asked Sire Kay,
not nearly as angry as he should have been. In fact, he seemed to be admiring their chivalric handiwork.
Actually securing the castle proved easy enough, bragged Tyndall. It may be stout, but the stoutest walls can be overcome if not properly guarded. Since we had not adequate artillery for a prolonged siege, we elected to focus our efforts on the staff instead. After consulting and agreeing to a plan, we caused a distraction to be made that drew every fighting man in the fortress.
A fire outside? I asked coolly. Despite myself, I was finding myself interested in the tale.
Nay, master, Rondar said, grinning. We considered that, but it seemed so mundane.
Instead, I went back to the gatehouse of the castle and begged to buy a loaf of bread and a wheel of cheese for our supper, showing a fair amount of silver. While the lord was closeted in chambers, the castellan's assistant was eager enough for the trade and had gone to fetch the food, when the hue and cry went up from the top of the tower. I had climbed the exterior and caused a few select cantrips to activate, the taller apprentice said, smugly. A bit difficult in a sling, but I managed well enough. I used a few blue magic charms to agitate the guards on duty into a panic over things they thought they saw and heard. It only took a moment or two to convince them all that they were being robbed.
Rondal took up the tale again. The cry aroused most of the men. Of course, I was immediately suspected, being so near to the hall and a stranger. Alas, I was taken into custody. My blade was taken from me, and I was told to stand in the hall against the capture of my supposed confederate. Being a gentleman, he said, a gleam in his eye, I of course surrendered my sword to the lord upon request, and rightly denied being a party to any petty theft. They left a single man to watch me while the rest charged up the tower stairs, certain they had cornered a thief, caught in the act. Once I was certain nearly all of the fighting men in the castle had gone into the tower, I easily overpowered my guard and closed the door to it. With only one way in or out, it was simple to turn a refuge into a jailhouse. A quick spellbinding and they were effectively imprisoned.
I subdued the guard at the gate, Sir Festeran said proudly. I used that sleeping charm I can just barely manage, he added proudly. He went down like a pregnant sow. Once he was in captivity, we had effectively taken the castle, as there were no more defenders.
And the domain, Rondal reminded him. Tarragon was ours.
And the domain. I repeated, my head spinning. You just figured you would do something utterly stupid and impetuous and get me involved in a war with Sashtalia. You know the Lord of Sashtalia is not going to appreciate losing a domain, even a pissant little estate like this, to a couple of jumped-up ruffians. On the contrary, Mage Lord, Rondal said smoothly, we were quite straightforward in our execution and obeyed all of the applicable rules of warfare. Indeed, not a drop of blood was spilled. It was a most gentle conquest. Sastalia's men surrendered to us the next day, once it was clear they could not escape the tower without our leave, nor eat more than bread or water without our permission. And where might they be now? Asked Sayake. They pledged token ransoms to be paid by next spring, and we allowed them to take their personal weapons and belongings and quit the fief on parole against those ransoms. Even Sir Pangene, though he made many empty threats about the Lord of Sashtalia's willingness to commit to total war to retain this pissant domain. The others, however, were happy to find other employment, considering the alternative to ransom. I do believe they will be gentlemen of their word, Rondal said thoughtfully. The mage stars on their brows will help ensure that, Sir Festeran said smugly. And why will the Lord of Sashtalia not immediately answer your rash act with a full-scale invasion of Sevendor? I asked patiently. Two reasons, Mage Lord, Sir Festeran said with the other's permission. Firstly, there is the matter of his preoccupation with the antics of Baron Arathaniel, who, it is well known, is toying with the idea of invading Sashtalia himself from the north in the future. Now that there is a good and secure bridge through Birchroot, he could march a host through into the heart of Sashtalia directly, he said, as if he was lecturing. Which is why Sashtalia would not entertain so much as a skirmish with Sevendor. It had nothing to do with the conquest. The sire of Sashtalia knows that if his banners are involved with an internal war, Tyndall added, Sendaria could not pass up such an opportunity to fish in troubled waters. But the main reason he will not go to war with Sevendor is because Taragwin was not, in fact, conquered by Sevendor, Rondal picked up smoothly, as will be plain to any and all who read the utterly legal writ of conquest filed with the duchy. You had nothing to do with this at all, Master Minolan. The conquest was executed and the domain was claimed by the Astazi Order of Arcane Knights, he said with a certain sense of theatre. The order, quite recently constituted, Tyndall added, slyly looking at his fellow knights, is a small but select band of knights magi dedicated to furthering the ideals of chivalry and enlightened magic through productive errantry. Accepted members of the order are required to conduct themselves according to the highest standards of chivalry, pledge themselves to at least one act of errantry a year, 1 week in residence at Astazi Hall as day steward, and to defend the lands of the order to the best of their ability. They are to gather once a year, as their duties allow, and give tale to their errantry and renew their pledge to the ideals of the order, and will also have a really good party, he added. The rule of the order grants members wide latitude in the performance of their duties, but the hall shall be open to any member at any time, in perpetuity, Sir Fess said. And in addition to the knights, there is provision for a certain number of sworn sergeants and men-at-arms who may aspire to the ideals of the order but lack noble birth or chivalrous recognition. We didn't want to leave out a worthy candidate just because they hadn't been knighted yet. Upkeep of the order's lands, specifically the domain of Taragwin, and the keep, now known as Astazi Hall, will be paid by the order through payment of dues, rents from the village, and other regular business of the estate, Rondal recited. Tribute is likewise to be paid from that treasury. In addition, a permanent castellan, preferably a member knight of the order, shall be hired to oversee the operations of the estate and maintain its defence, at the direction of the head of the order and its council, which, Tyndall interrupted, currently is comprised of the three founding members and the head, each having an equal vote in the affairs of the order. The castellan of which shall be in residence, or his designated assistant, for the entire year. To him would fall the responsibility of overseeing the watch on the snowstone outcropping. We'll probably have to build a fortified installation at the site, Sir Festeran remarked apologetically, and man the tower constantly, and ward it tighter than a baron's daughter. But that's just the public mission of the Order, Rondol continued, before I could speak. Secretly, it will be dedicated to pursuing and destroying Pratt the Rat and his slimy brethren, he said with a surprisingly severe sneer of contempt. After what he did to Astasia and Tyndall, and then to the rest of us on the way here, it's clear he has a vendetta against us, regardless of what we do, what we did, or what we might do. So we use the Order as a cover to hunt him, relentlessly. No one else is dedicating themselves to that, Tyndall pointed out. Your contacts at court are only mildly interested in what the Brotherhood does. They certainly don't have an interest in hunting Pratt. The Brotherhood is a minor inconvenience, politically, mostly active in a province outside the control of the Crown. Yet Pratt and his rat folk have an enmity against us that should, that must, be challenged. The Order gives us the tool with which to challenge it, and Tarragwan gives us the resources. I stared at the three of them, slack-jawed, for a moment, my head spinning. Thankfully, Sire Kay was thoughtful enough to speak before I could once again. So, you gentlemen, he began, without a trace of irony in the term, have taken it upon yourselves to not just insert yourselves into a delicate regional political situation, but have decided to take your interests beyond the borders of the kingdom itself. Again the three knights looked at each other, seemed to confer by expression alone, and turned back to face their elders. Yes, Rondol said, as the other two nodded. My head had yet to stop spinning. The implications of what these youngsters had done were impressive. In one stroke, they had accomplished a lot. I stood. The three young knights stood as well. Sir Rondol, I began. Sir Tyndall, surrender your witch stones to me. They both went pale as death. They hesitated, but their hands were already moving toward the silk pouches around their necks as their eyes flashed in panic. Both stones eventually appeared, and with shaking hands they gave them over to me. Both boys had bowed heads. Both looked terrified, as well they should. I entrusted the two of you with responsibilities, I began, my voice low. Only the crackle of the fire joined me. I have invested tremendous energy, resources, and money in training you for my service. I have armed you with both knowledge and weapons unseen since the Majocracy, and provided for you as you were raised in your station. I gave you a home, I pointed out, pleadingly. I tried to give you a family. By all the gods, I tried to give you the guidance you needed to become, God's willing, men. Not just men, but knights of the realm. Men of honor, I said sharply, turning on my heel in front of them. Men who know how to do their duties. Knowing that it means surrendering your witch stones, gentlemen, are you still ready to answer for what you have done, here and elsewhere? I asked pointedly. In truth, I had very little idea of what my apprentices had been up to in the last year, while I had kept Sevendor from falling apart, helped raise my children, held the hand of the king, and dealt with the increasingly complicated Alka-Alon situation. But I was sure they had done something they should feel guilty about. I expected them to look at each other at least before they answered. Instead, they stared straight ahead. Yes, Master, Tyndall said. Yes, Mage Lord, Rondol said. At nearly the same moment, both had a stubborn gleam in their eye, and a resolute set to their jaw. Even if it means our stones, Rondol added, we did what was right, if not perhaps what was expected of us. That brought a snort from Kay and a giggle from Dara. I thought Sephaestron would cower a bit, but he stood as well. You are not my apprentice, Sephaestron, you are my vassal. As such, I will address your actions in a moment. Festeran did not budge. I shall stand with the other members of my order, Mage Lord, he said quietly. Interesting. I suppose one could argue that you only half fouled this up, I sighed. After all, you did deliver your charge from the Gobarbans, did you not? He sleeps in the cellar below, agreed Rondol, safe and hale. I sincerely hope so, or this would be a total disaster. So one could argue that you failed half of your mission. Should I return one stone, then? I asked, a bit sarcastically. And if so, which of you is the more deserving? Again, I expected to see them look at each other for support. Again, they stared stubbornly ahead. But Tyndall spoke first. Master, Sir Rondell deserves the stone far more than I, he said quickly. His mastery of warfare and strategy make him a far more valuable asset in the war than I am. Mage Lord, I must disagree, Rondell said, finally looking at his fellow. Sir Tyndall has demonstrated uncommon valour and a unique approach to situations that make him a profound asset in the field. His daring and willingness to take initiative has proven to be a decisive element in several of our encounters. Sir Tyndall should take the stone, he pleaded. I tried to keep my face expressionless. Instead of handing a stone to either of them, I opened the pouch at my belt where I keep such precious things and set them gently inside. I closed the pouch with a bit of ceremony. By your actions, you clearly have demonstrated your unsuitability for a shard of Irionite, I said, as both boys blushed with embarrassment. Gentlemen, when I sent you out of Sevendor a year ago, it was with the intention of forging you into useful tools and potent weapons. You learned magic at Anarion, warcraft at Raelancor, and knightcraft at Carguenion. Trigg only knows what you learned in Gilmora, but even Marshal Brendal was impressed with you. So you must have learned something. I sought to see you transformed into Knights of the Realm, warrior magi who could lead as well as follow. Yet when I give you a simple order, the simplest of orders, you take it upon yourselves to seize the initiative and conquer a domain I distinctly do not recall telling you to conquer. You founded a chivalric order that for the life of me I don't recall asking you to found. You decided, on your own, to cultivate a deadly enemy, when, Trigg knows, we have a gracious plenty already. I looked at them, but they were no longer looking at me like guilty boys. They were looking at me like men being harshly criticized, and ready to respond, powerfully. Time to end their suspense. No use torturing them too long. In other words, you have both exceeded my wildest expectations, and Sir Festeran, I commend you as well for your assistance and loyal support of these two miscreants. It does you all credit. Does that mean you aren't mad at us? Rondell asked, confused. Does that mean we get our stones back? Asked Tyndall, excitedly. Yes, mostly. And no. That took them by surprise. So did what I did next. I held out my hand, and Leandara placed two small wooden boxes I'd had prepared for the occasion into my palm. I handed one to each of them. They opened them hesitantly, and then I got the pleasure of seeing their eyes open wider than ever before. In each box was a perfectly smooth sphere of Irionite, crafted and enchanted by the Alca'alon. They were each twice the size of their previous shards, and they were further soaked in the arcane sophistications of tree folk magic. These were far more powerful tools than the shards they had borne. But then these were no longer boys. Tyndall and Rondell had become men in the last year, men deserving of my respect. The stunt, with their new chivalrous order, was ingenious, and saved me a lot of time and energy, as they had known it would. With the boys watching the outcropping in Tarraguin, I felt it was as secure as it could be if anyone else was watching it without political risk to Sevendor. And this new order might have its uses, too. I couldn't fault them for their antipathy toward the Brotherhood of the Rat. They had taken a very active hand in politics lately, and a couple of vengeful, scheming, terribly powerful knights magi on their collective ass might turn out to be a good thing. The boys looked at their new prizes in wonder, as well they should. The two spheres were part of a set known as the Spellmonger's Seven, and they were unlike most of the other witchstones among the various arcane orders, in that they had never been associated with the dead god. They were also laced with such a beautiful magical architecture that doing magic with them was almost intuitive. Plus, their extra mass gave them far more power than they were used to with their old stones. I put those stones in your hands because you have proven yourselves worthy of them, I continued lecturing them as they began to appreciate the power at their command. It would take a few days for them to get attuned to them, but if the recent overhaul on the Witch Sphere, have to find a better name for it now, was any indication, the Spellmonger stones would be as easy to use as a glove. Master, we... Tyndall said, and trailed off wordlessly as he began to explore his new stone. Thank you, Mage Lord, Rondell said more formally, but no less distracted by the power in his hands. But surely there are more worthy. He stopped when Tyndall's elbow dug him in the ribs. I grinned. Perhaps more powerful, perhaps more effective, perhaps more intelligent, I jibed, but no more loyal. You have proven yourselves as Knights Magi. From now on, you will be partially in charge of magical enforcement, too, part of the burden of the Spellmonger Seven. But I think that you will be more than up to the task. Indeed, I cannot think of a task I could set for you that you couldn't accomplish, short of slaying the dead god. Tyndall shrugged.
Give us time, Master, he said casually. I'm working on a few things.
The idea of Tyndall, of all magi, discovering the way to slay the unslayable almost made me laugh uncharitably. Dara wasn't so fortunate, earning her a look from my senior apprentice. Well, put those toys away until later, I said warmly. Fetch another bottle and tell me about this plot to smuggle Snowstone. To whom was Pangene selling it? The boys were relieved, and they imposed on Sir Festeran to bring more wine under the pretense that it was part of the job of the day steward, a point about which Fess promised to address at the next meeting. But he good-naturedly headed out to the buttery while his fellows told their tale. It seems that a local bandit, of noble birth but fallen estate, discovered the value of Snowstone somehow and recognized the outcropping in Tarraguin. He was quietly mining and shipping small quantities westward, through Sashtalia and as far as Lassaport, where his partner would take delivery. From thence, he did not know. But he was very helpful in giving us the name of that partner and the shop to which the deliveries are made. Good, good, I nodded. We'll track that down and trace it back to its source. Let's pray it's just an unscrupulous enchanter and not agents of the dead god. That might prove to be disastrous. And just who was this local bandit? Sayake asked, picking up on something I missed. Tyndall grinned. I believe you know the gentleman. And he well knows you. You were a defining event in his life. Our old acquaintance, Sir Ganyalan, son of Gimbal. He still bears the mage mark on his face in token of his unpaid ransom, and he hates us all bitterly. We gave him a few additional marks before we let him go. Let him go? I asked, astonished. Why in Lewin's name would you do that? Rondal looked confused. Master, he wasn't doing anything illegal. He... What? My turn to look confused. Master, he was mining Snowstone, which isn't illegal. The Crown has not seen fit to regulate its trade, since you were nearly the only source, and he had secured permission from the rightful lord of the domain, so he wasn't doing anything wrong. That's one reason why we had to conquer Tarraguin, not just spy on it. We could not legally stop the mining any other way. But his mage mark makes him an outlaw in Sevendor, or in the domain sworn to Sevendor. But this is Sashtalia, Mage Lord, so he is free to come and go as any honourable gentleman would. So now he's just down the river, somewhere, in hiding. Yes, Master, Tyndall said innocently, and wherever he hides, he will be taking his mage marks with him and the tracking spell we placed upon them. If Ganyalan is involved in more mischief, I figured it would be best if we could discover where he was at our convenience.
An excellent plan, Lady Ithalia said, nodding. He knows far too much about Snowstone now, this night, and if he has an antipathy for the spellmonger, then he will likely lead you to your enemies. Knowing where he goes and who they are is strategically sound. You reason like an Alon, she approved.
Thank you, my lady, Tyndall said with a shy smile, bowing as he poured her more wine. If I didn't know better, I'd swear he was trying to charm her. Of course, the transgenically enchanted Alka Alon, male and female, were beings of surpassing beauty in human eyes, I'd learned. But few humans would have the temerity to even consider such a liaison. Tyndall apparently had a secret temerity mine somewhere I didn't know about.
What news of the war, sir? Rondal asked, trying to break Tyndall's attention away from her.
Thanks to your helpful reconnoitering, I said, after trying to decide just which parts to tell them, we will be much more prepared for the offensive this spring. The Gavanni have spent most of the winter gathering forces in the penumbra, so we're anticipating a very big push in Gilmora, and preparing accordingly. It will be a bloodbath, but they want Gilmora, and we don't want them to have it.
Are we going to be part of that? Asked Tyndall eagerly. Mayhap, I shrugged. But you'll start the campaign year on detached duty. That was the big piece of news they needed to hear. Lady Ithalia bears news from a council of the Alka Elon, and they have asked us to participate in a conference, moot, gathering, party, I asked, unsure of what the proper term was. I looked to Ithalia for help.
The Council of High Lords in this region merely desires an opportunity to discuss the abomination, Snowstone, and other issues of mutual importance to our peoples, she said, her voice like bells. The events of the past few years have attracted the attention of some long sundered from the affairs of this world among my people. They wish to know what is happening, and more importantly, who this brave new Humani leader is, who has rallied his own folk to war so quickly and adeptly.
Which is polite Alka Elon language, for we're in trouble, interjected Dara. I shot her a look. She had overheard far too much, and had guessed far more in the last few months, particularly since she had begun working directly with the Elon on her Hawk project. While that gave her some insight into their affairs that I found valuable, I also wished she had a better sense of discretion. Lady Ithalia, at least, seemed to be acting in humanity's interest, but some of the things Dara had passed on to me had given me some doubts about other Alka Elon. I looked forward to the springtime moot with the tree folk, as much as I did my next audience with Her Majesty.
We are not in trouble, my lady,
Lady Ithalia corrected with as much of an impudent grin her breathtaking face was capable of making.
Far from it. The elders just wish to know more about Snowstone, and about the mage who crafted it. It is the first novel thing that they have seen since your people fell from the void. They are curious, and they are as worried about the abomination as you. There are two large Alkan settlements that will be endangered soon, if the Gavani continue their advance.
Alkan settlements? Asked Tyndall, curiously. In the Wilderlands, like the one in Beauvau Vale?
These are much larger and much more important, she said, shaking her head. Ancient cities of great power once, but now they are but shadows of their former glories. Some are but half empty with our folk. They remain all but hidden behind veils of magic so thick even our own kind have difficulty seeing them. But the evil horizon of the Umbra threatens to strike away those protections. If that happens, well, this war will begin to look very different.
I wasn't sure what to make of that statement, but that's what the proposed council was ostensibly for. We're not the only ones going, I pointed out. The Karshak and some of the other Elon have been invited.
In an advisory capacity?
Stressed the beautiful non-human woman.
This remains a council of the Alka Elon of this region. Six lords from four kindreds will be represented, leaders of might and power.
Well, good, grumbled Rondol. Maybe they can help us fight this war. The priest kings are not exactly the rough-and-tumble kind, I warned. The Alka Elon are deadly fighters. But from what the ambassadors have been telling me, their numbers have dwindled, and not all of them are eager to take on the dead god.
As they are neither priests nor kings, Ithalia said amusedly, I would hesitate to characterize them thus. And many bear Humani almost as much antipathy as the Gavani do. But some are much more in favor of close relations to your people, particularly among my kindred. There have been hundreds who have volunteered to take up arms and join your fight.
Our fight, I corrected her.
Our fight,
she agreed reluctantly.
So many, in fact, that the few songmasters who know the old transgenic enchantments are growing weary with the transformation songs.
You mean there will be more Alka Elon around like you? Tyndall asked excitedly. He was so obvious about his interest, I wanted to cringe. Is there anything more relentless than the libido of a 17-year-old?
Yes, Sir Tyndall,
she smiled and giggled, which made me think of sugar cakes for some reason.
So many that some of our lords grow fearful of the movement and seek to prohibit it. Already more than 100 have taken on new, taller, stronger bodies. While we lose a bit of our power in doing so, I cannot argue that the strength and vitality in a human-cast body is exhilarating,
she said, her eyes flashing. I cleared my throat to regain the lad's attention. The upshot is that we will be departing from Sevendor just after the equinox to, well, parts unknown. They're still figuring which magical tree city in which to hold the council, but they at least agreed on a time that won't interfere with the campaign too much. After that, we'll have a lot better idea of exactly where to deploy you two new tools. But that's next year, and this is this year. We're going to escort you and your charge back to Sevendor, have a truly drunken Yuletide, and then get ready for the battles ahead. Assuming the head of your new order sees fit to release you from your duties, I added dryly. Well, that is a good question, Rondal agreed. We probably should ask him, Tyndall nodded. Yes, you are released from your new duties long enough to get to Yule at Sevendor and fight a few battles before you get back to the important job of guarding a pile of rocks, I said, rolling my eyes. Rondal blinked. I beg your pardon, Master, but you seem to be under the impression that you are the head of the Astazi Order. I'm not, I asked, confused. You mean one of you, snotlings, is the head? Rondal looked appalled. Mage Lord, we are but new-made knights, still learning the trade. For one of us to make ourselves head of the Order would be to invite ridicule, when we dearly wish to see this institution taken seriously. So when my friend and I were planning this, Tyndall nodded, we concluded that only the finest example of chivalry and errantry would be of sufficient stature as to allure the kind of idealistic young war magi who aspire to our company. So we decided that the Dragon Slayer was clearly the best choice. Sire Kay, guffawed Dara. Me? Sire Kay asked in surprise. My castellan? I asked absently. I didn't mind, really, as I was certain the post would be largely ceremonial, and Kay, truthfully, had enough on his hands with the new baby. But I wasn't thinking about the potential imposition on one of my most important vassals without them having the least bit of courtesy in asking me about it first. I was focused on something else, Tyndall had said. He called Rondal friend. For the first time, I could remember. I smiled, despite myself. With all the other chaos we were suffering with, I realized I had one less thing to worry about. You have been listening to Knights Magi, Book 4 of the Spellmonger series. Produced by Greg Lawrence. Associate Producer Emily Durr. Text copyright 2017 by Terry Mancor. Production copyright 2017 by Podium Publishing. All rights reserved. If you enjoyed this audiobook, let us know. Take a quick moment to rate and review it on Audible, so we know we're bringing you audiobooks you'll love.